You know, there are dozens of models of fitness trackers that monitor your heart rate, your sleep patterns. They record your workouts. But are the data they collect accurate, and are they effective tools for becoming more active and health conscious? Larry Mueller here, and we're talking about fitness trackers now for the next half hour with Lisa Cadmus Bertram, who is director of the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab and an associate professor of kinesiology at the UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. So as we talk with Lisa, I hope you'll join in. Do you use a fitness tracker? Has it changed your exercise routine? Which features of your device do you find the most valuable? Can you figure them all out? That's another good question, because I've had mine for quite a while, and I don't think I've figured half of it out yet. So as we talk with her a long time, I hope you'll join in. Lisa's been studying fitness trackers. How long, by the way? And welcome.
Just thank you. I'm pleased to be here. Just about 15 years. I think I bought my first fitness tracker, the first generation Fitbit, near the end of 2010. And have you been using them ever since, and did my first research study using fitness trackers sometime, I think, starting around 2011. So it's been some time, and it's been fun to watch this group of technologies change and evolve over the years.
Yeah, and it's certainly evolved, for sure. And as you listen to Lisa, I hope you'll join in. The number to call with your own question. Use a fitness tracker? Has it changed your routine? Which features do you find the most valuable? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. You're director of the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab. What does the lab do?
So my research program focuses on understanding the associations between physical activity and risk of chronic diseases. I mostly focus on cancer as well as management of chronic diseases. So we do a lot of work in development of programs to help people who have been treated for cancer to adopt and maintain a healthier and more active lifestyle.
And these fitness trackers can help with that.
They do, and that's part of the research program that I used to do a little bit more actively than I do now, is studies in the laboratory to actually determine the accuracy of various features on different fitness tracker models. So to understand how good are they at accurately measuring steps, how good are they at actually measuring minutes of physical activity, how good are they at measuring your heart rate when you're resting, how good are they at measuring your heart rate during exercise, how well can they correctly classify what type of activity you're doing. So for example, some trackers, when you exercise, will notice what type of activity it is, and it will record it as such. It will know that you're running, it will know that you're walking, it will know that you're swimming. So we've done studies as well to assess how accurate trackers are at correctly tagging those activities without input from the user.
So my Apple Watch, when I'm golfing, if I take a particularly violent swing, it'll say, "Oh, did you fall down? Should I call for emergency services?" And I quickly have to get in there and say, "No, it's probably just a bad swing."
That's very funny, and that's a good example that I'll use sometime in class when I'm teaching about where these things fall short, right? So, for example, especially in the older days when they were first coming out, they were not very good at picking up steps when your hands were stationary. So for example, they would dramatically undercount my steps when I was pushing a grocery cart or pushing a stroller. And at the time, a lot of my physical activity was done while pushing a stroller. So the companies are always hard at work trying to improve their pattern recognition algorithms to be able to better understand the difference between, for example, jogging and being on an elliptical machine, or, you know, cycling is another one that's difficult for trackers because the tracker is on your wrist, which is not the part of your body that's primarily involved in the motion of cycling. So that's, there's some inherent challenges when you're trying to measure the activity of a human body, which has all these different parts, which could be moving in different directions and at different speeds and in different patterns, yet you only have one sensor in one place. It's just the watch. It's just the one sensor measuring the movement of that one part of the body, and trying to combine that with information from heart rate and other things to make the best possible guess about what type of activity you're doing.
Well, hearing too. You know, I go to a Badger basketball game and it's a tight game and everybody's shouting. I'll get a notice that, hey, it's too loud. You have exceeded what you should be listening to, Larry, essentially, because it's too loud.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the first examples when heart rate first came, the first trackers didn't have heart rate sensors. And I think around 2014, 2015, they did. And there was a year in there that the Badgers were in the NCAA playoffs and doing very well. And I'm not a basketball fan. I don't follow basketball. I was just watching this one game because everyone else was. And I got so wrapped up in it that I actually took a look down at my Fitbit and noticed that my heart rate was like a full 15 or 20 beats above its normal resting heart rate. So it is funny how they can pick up on random little things in our everyday lives like that.
Yeah. Lori in Lodi has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thank you. I am on oxygen, so I'm, concerned about my O2 levels. And I bought an iPhone. I already had an iPad, thinking I would get the Apple Watch and get my oxygen checked. Literally, the week I was going to go get it is when they had to stop selling them, because they're using someone else's technology, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is there another device that would be compatible with my Apple devices that senses O2? I know it's not a replacement for my pulse oximeter thing, but just for casual checking on it.
Sure.
That's a great question. And I'm not sure off the top of my head, that's not one of the features that we interact with the most frequently. You might look at the Oura Ring to see if they do. But yeah, I can imagine, like you said, it's not going to replace your pulse oximeter, but it is nice just to have, another source of data coming in. So it's too bad that you weren't able to get the Apple Watch before they stopped shipping those out.
Yeah. And that's going to be, that is obviously not resolved.
Right.
So it's going to be, it could be a long time or never, I suppose.
I don't know. I hope, I imagine they'll find some resolution or settlement, perhaps.
How active does a person need to be before buying one of these devices?
I would say zero activity. One of the things that the devices are wonderful for is helping us to get a baseline understanding of what our activity patterns look like. So regardless of what your goals are, if your goals are just to go from being completely sedentary to moving a little bit, to establishing a beginning exercise routine, to something more rigorous than that, it's always important to know where you're starting from. And so I think that's one of the most valuable aspects of fitness trackers for anybody, is just to understand, what is my resting heart rate? How many steps do I take on a typical day? So that you can start to set some baby steps and some goals around that.
So there are a bunch of trackers out there. I mean, and I'm sure some are better than others. What should we look for in a fitness tracker?
So one of the things that, companies need to do is they need to continually add bells and whistles and more features so that they can convince consumers that the newer model is superior to the older model. And there have been some features that have been added along the way that really have been game changers. And I would say heart rate is one of the biggest of those. But the reality is that most fitness trackers are going to have the key features that are the most important for most people. I would recommend that some of the brands that have been around for a longer period of time and have been better studied by researchers would include things like, any of the Fitbit models, Garmin. Garmin is originally known for making watches for triathletes and other endurance athletes, but they also have a product line that's intended for, you know, just everyday people trying to, you know, understand their health and movement as well. Or the Apple Watch would be another good one. Mm-hmm. All of those really do have decent accuracy on the core metrics that I think are the most important, and those are heart rate, especially resting heart rate, minutes of physical activity intensity, and steps.
Lisa, excuse me, Lisa Cadmus Bertram, our guest today. She's director of the Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab and is an associate professor of kinesiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have her with us today. Questions for her as we talk fitness trackers. I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today on WPR News. Larry Mueller here with my guest today, Lisa Cadmus Bertram. We're talking with her. She knows a whole lot about these fitness trackers. She's been working on it for many years now and personally uses them, by the way. And I hope you'll join in with your questions. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Are there better devices, before we go to the phones, are there better devices for, say, a runner or a swimmer or weightlifter, you know, depending on where you are?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for runners who are, I would say, more serious runners, especially if you're running longer distances, 10K, half marathon, marathon, Garmin makes some really nice devices. Often they're accompanied by a chest strap, which is really the most accurate way to measure heart rate during exercise. One of the things that folks who exercise with a fitness tracker might notice is that if you glance at your fitness tracker while you're exercising, sometimes your heart rate looks suspiciously high and other times it looks suspiciously low, and sometimes it looks about what it should look like when you're exercising. And that's one of the things that we've identified in studies that we've conducted in our lab, is that during rest, these fitness trackers are very accurate at measuring your heart rate. And as you exercise, and especially as the exercise becomes more vigorous, there starts to be a little bit more noise in the data, so that when you look at it at a specific moment in time, it might be erring quite high or quite low, although the average over the exercise session lands about right where it should be. So I think it's still a useful metric. But if you're in the middle of a race and you just want to get a quick metric on where your exertion is, something like a Garmin Forerunner that comes with a chest strap that has an electrode that actually sits right over your heart is far better, because it will give you an accurate, you know, second by second, minute by minute measure of your heart rate variability. Weightlifting and yoga, those are really challenging ones, because the movements are often not repetitive and regular enough for the tracker to be able to identify what it is that you're doing. It probably understands that you're exercising because your heart rate is up. But in general, I would say that there's a lot of great apps out there that you can use to program in what your weightlifting routine is and to log it. And that's probably a better way to track it than any kind of single sensor that you could put on your body.
Yeah, that makes sense. Pam in Wausau, whoop, I think we lost Pam. She was interested in a fitness tracker that has good security and isn't too complex.
Oh, so that's a good question. So most of the Fitbits are very easy to use, although they do have a lot of features and they keep adding more. And so I think that's a little bit of a downside. The security aspect is one that... And I was listening to part of your previous interview as well, that changes over time. So, for example, Fitbit used to be its own company. It's now a subsidiary of Google. And so its terms are presumably now subsumed by Google's terms of use. So that's something to consider if you're concerned about having location data, for example. You may want to choose a tracker that doesn't include a GPS. Although, as we mentioned before, if you're carrying a cell phone around with you, your location is available through that anyway.
Richard in Madison will go to you. Hi, Richard.
Hi. So I was wondering about Android phones. And, for example, that when that lady was speaking earlier about the Apple and the feature that's missing, does that apply to Android also? How reliable are they? So on and so forth. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
Are you asking about like step tracking and health features available directly in the Android phones?
Exactly.
Yeah. So the step tracking feature in phones generally is pretty accurate and pretty reliable. It really depends on what your behavior is around your phone. So, for example, if you are a person who wears pants with pockets and you keep your phone in your pocket, then it might be really quite a good way to track your steps throughout the day. I know for me and for some other women, sometimes our pants don't have pockets, so we might be wearing skirts and dresses. We might have our phones in a backpack. Our phones might be in a purse. Our phones might be in a desk. And so you have to kind of think about the degree to which you're willing to make sure that you keep your phone on your body all day long. And if you do, then the phone can be a great way to track steps, whether it's Apple or Android.
Yeah, I keep leaving mine in my office when I go to the bathroom or go down to see somebody, and then now I've lost those steps.
Yeah.
It always irks me when I do that. Richard, thank you very much. Bill in Cottage Grove, we'll go to you. Hi, Bill.
Yes, good morning. I had a question that may have already been answered when I just tuned in, and it had to do with exercising, primarily doing weightlifting, which would include some cardio, but mostly weightlifting. And apparently that doesn't translate very well from the watch.
So I appreciate getting a second crack at this question, Bill. And so I'd like to expand and add a little bit more detail that might be interesting or helpful to you. First, one thing that I'll add that is not related to fitness trackers, but many people may not be aware, is that our federal physical activity guidelines relate not just to aerobic physical activity, but also to weight training. So we are learning more and more about just how critically important it is for us to engage in regular strength training throughout the lifespan. And the recommendation is that adults, including older adults, should be doing strength training at least twice a week. And there's lots of resources, lots of ways that you can do this. You don't need to belong to a gym. You can do it at home with resistance bands or just with body weight. So I just want to put a little plug in there that resistance training is not just for the jocks. It's for all of us at all stages of life, critically important to our health and our ability to maintain our independence and our function. Okay, so going back to the topic of fitness trackers, some of them do have the option where you can put in what activity you're about to do. So you can tell it, I'm about to do weight training. And then when you're done, you can say, I'm done weight training. And that way it will log that correctly and it will know what you were doing. But on the whole, like I said before, fitness trackers are not really the optimal way to track your progress with a weight training program.
All right. There you go, Bill. Thank you very much for calling. Doug in Madison, what's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, I was wanting to ask about the Vital Fit Track, which is highly recommended for seniors. It's been out, and they certainly advertise that it's the hottest thing. Has the heart rate monitoring, waterproof, sleep monitoring, step counter, calorie monitor, alarm remote, and so forth. It's the state-of-the-art fitness tracking watch. Does she have an opinion on that?
So the Vital Fit, is that the name of it, Doug?
Yes.
Vital Fit.
Okay, so it sounds like this has a lot of the similar features that other trackers have. I'm not familiar with research on this particular one, which doesn't mean that it hasn't been conducted, but it sounds encouraging to me in the sense that all of the things that I would recommend paying attention to, your steps, your sleep, your exercise minutes, heart rate are being included.
Doug, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Call or email to ask what are the best devices for tracking sleep. They've been using a Fitbit for years and they need to replace it now. What about an Apple Watch or Aura Ring?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things that's challenging about assessing the accuracy of these commercial devices is that particularly with sleep. So, for example, if we're interested in assessing the accuracy of a device for steps, we can put somebody on a treadmill and count the number of steps that they're taking and compare it to the count that the tracker recorded. With sleep, it's a lot more difficult because you would need to actually have some gold standard measure of sleep, like have somebody in a sleep lab to record, you know, to determine how accurate the sleep data are. Based on my understanding of what we know in the literature, I think either the Aura Ring or the Apple Watch or the Fitbit is a solid choice for measuring sleep. I use the Fitbit myself for measuring sleep, and I do find it somewhat helpful. I think one of the other things that people might be wondering about is a lot of the devices now have a new metric called readiness or something similar to that, which combines the heart rate data, your resting heart rate. Your resting heart rate, your heart rate variability, and your sleep to try to give you sort of a picture of how ready, how rested and recovered your body is and how ready it is for the day or for workouts. So that's another thing to consider if that's the type of metric that you're interested in.
Trista emailed, is there a specific tracker that can tell the difference between a rough bouncing ride in a garbage truck and actual steps taken? Trista can drive an hour without getting out and it'll tell them they log between 1,000 and 8,000 steps. Also, are they somewhat accurate for measuring blood pressure?
Those are two good questions. So the driving question has been a longstanding one, and the algorithms have gotten much better for normal driving, right? And so I think that the crux of her question is bouncing around in a truck. Yeah. And I would guess that there are not devices, you know, I think all devices are, that's going to be a struggle. That's going to be a struggle for all devices. I'm not familiar with which devices measure blood pressure. Many of them do measure, you know, heart rate and heart rate variability. Yeah, I don't know how to answer the question about the blood pressure.
So heart rate, I mean, so, you know, what does the watch tell you if it says your resting heart rate is whatever? I don't know what it would be, but what do you do with that?
So
with those data?
Yeah, so one thing that I notice, I'll just give a little anecdote about my resting heart rate, is I go through phases where I'm exercising quite a bit and quite regularly, and then life happens. You know, I have a job, I have three children, and things happen. And sometimes, you know, there are a few weeks at a time where I'm not exercising, and I can actually see the difference in my resting heart rate. So my resting heart rate when I've been exercising regularly is probably 3 or 4 beats lower per minute, which is a sign of cardiorespiratory fitness, than when I've really fallen, you know, off the exercise wagon and haven't been exercising for a while. So everybody's resting heart rate is different. Typically, they're around, you know, 60, 70, 80 beats per minute. But you can really learn a lot by paying attention to your own resting heart rate and whether it's increasing or decreasing as the months and years go by.
Joanne in Viroqua has something for us. Hi, Joanne.
Hi, good morning. One of your early callers was wondering about a device that does pulse oximetry or measures the oxygen in the blood. I actually have a Garmin Fenix 6, and it does have that capability. You can turn it on or off. It does use a fair amount of the battery to use that feature with it.
Oh.
Thank you. That's great to know.
Very good to know. Joanne, thank you so much. Aura rings, how well do they work compared to the watch, let's say?
Yeah, so the Aura rings are actually okay. And they do a lot of the same things that the watch watches do. They measure heart rate with the same technology that the watches do. One of the things that you might consider if you're interested in the Oura ring, for those that aren't familiar, it looks like sort of a thick, chunky wedding band. It's literally a ring that you wear on your finger. It doesn't have any type of display on it. So depending on how you use your hands throughout the day, you know, you might find that to be a convenient place to wear a tracker or not. It also depends on how you like to see the data from your tracker. If you use the app exclusively and you don't really look at the data on your tracker, you might not mind the ring. For me, I do like to actually look at the data on the tracker itself. So I think that I would kind of miss having something that I can look at without having to then separately open the phone.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. And boy, did this half hour fly by.
Yeah.
You'll have to have you back and do this again, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And thanks to all the callers for their really wonderful, insightful questions.
They were great questions. Lisa Cadmus-Bertram is the director of Wisconsin Physical Activity Epidemiology Lab and associate professor of kinesiology at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Great to have her with us. And, of course, thanks to our team, Lee Rayburn, of course, our technical director today, Jeff Robbins is as well. Our producers, Clara Neipert and Joel Patnaud. And, of course, our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.